up, y'all? Welcome to our YouTube channel, Africans Talk Football. Appreciate your guys' continued support. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thank you.
So welcome to another episode of Africans Talk Football. I don't know why. We bring you fresh soccer news highlighting the Africans and African Americans who have seen success within the sport. We'll also bring you news from our favorite teams within the Premier League, MLS, as well as inform you on top European leagues, NWSL, and soccer news worldwide. Whether this is your first episode with us or you've been rocking with us from the jump, again, I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to all of our friends and supporters. Once again, my name is Cornelius, and I'm joined by my boys and fellow co-hosts. Mike, how you feeling tonight?
I'm feeling great, man. We have a special guest on, so I can't complain. How about you, Gabriel?
I feel good, man. Feel real, real good. How you feel, Salam?
Feel great, man. Excited to get started. Cornelius, you?
Amazing, amazing. Just want to hand it right back to you for the intro.
My dog, I appreciate you. Today's a big moment for us here on Africans Talk Football. We're honored to welcome our first ever female guest. She's a Zambian international, a standout at Clark University, and made her professional debut in the Zambian Women's Super League with ZEDI, a club run by the Zambian Institute of Sustainable Development, which is committed to empowering youth through education and football. In 2023, she earned a call-up to the Zambia national team and continues to make an impact on and off the pitch as a board member of the House of Hope. Please help me welcome Inonge Kalustian.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Absolutely. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you. Thank you for giving us your time. Like I said, this is a big one for us on the podcast. We're big fans of you, of what you do on and off the field, and you know, really want to share your story with our audience because I think that you have an incredible story to share. So I just want to hop right into it. How did sports, especially soccer, become such a big part of your life?
That is a great question. I will say PG County is definitely a very sports forward place. Although we're typically known for like producing basketball players and football players primarily. Like a lot of people go pro from PG County in those areas. But even still, I also come from a very sporty family. Both my parents played basketball through college. So they just kind of like let me try a bunch of different sports. And I played basketball and soccer through high school. But I was definitely a lot better at soccer. So that's kind of just how I got into it. You know, playing from a young age. I think soccer was my first sport as well, although I actually didn't start playing club soccer until my junior year of high school, which is like pretty late, if you know anything about like the recruiting process in the U.S. But yeah, so that was kind of my story of how I was just involved in different sports, but I ultimately ended up choosing soccer.
No, that's really interesting. I'm curious, like, when did you decide to really pursue soccer seriously? Because I mean, here in the United States, you know, playing club soccer your first year, your junior year is, it's very late.
So. Yeah, I was gonna ask if you didn't bring that up because I heard you talk about that on the podcast you did with like the Days Twins, and I thought that was crazy. I was like, wait, you didn't play club till junior year? So how did that process work? How did you even hear about the club you played for?
I honestly just had it stuck in my mind that I wanted to play college soccer. And so I was doing all this research. Like, my parents didn't know anything about it. My mom is from Zambia originally. So she, you know, didn't know anything about the recruiting process. And then my dad, he's an academic, so he didn't really know anything about it either. So I kind of took it upon myself to just do as much research as I could. Like, how do I get myself in front of college coaches? Like, what is that process like? I didn't really have that many like close friends that played club soccer. I will say there's a lot of soccer talent that comes out of PG as well, but it's typically people that go to private schools. And I went to public school, so I just wasn't like interacting with people like in that sphere. And so I, you know, did the research, figured out like I need to get on a club team. I reached out to a bunch of teams and a lot of them were like, don't want to touch this girl with a 10-foot pole. Like, you know, she's a junior and she hasn't played club yet. So, but you know, the team that I ended up going on, I remember I scheduled a call with the coach the day after they came back from the Disney showcase, which is like a really big one for recruiting. And he was like, yeah, like come out to our practice on Monday after we get back from the tournament. So I went, and then he was like, literally that first day, he was like, yeah, like I can definitely help you get to college if that's your goal. And he changed my life, truly. I really like owe so much to him. And I still talk to him. So yeah.
No, yeah. Great. Especially, I just wrapped up my fourth year coaching last season, youth soccer. And I know, you know, how, I guess, a big of a platform those showcases are. You kind of have to know about them and kind of have the resources ultimately to, in this country, to really play youth soccer. And that's interesting. I think, I don't think I've ever heard someone starting playing club soccer their junior year and still make it professionally, but that's inspiring. Gabriel, I'll pass it on to you for recruiting.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. No, it's wild because I've always wanted to go to the Disney tournament, and I never went. And that's always why I thought I never was going to play in like college. Honestly, I ended up playing, but you know, that's crazy. You started junior year and got to that point. And shout out to, of course, that, you know, that coach that helped you out throughout that process as well. That's really, really dope. Kind of talk me through like your recruiting process at that point, because it's really interesting to hear from your point of view, because I kind of, in the sense, did the same thing. I didn't know, but junior year, kind of walk me through like, when did you start knowing that you're going to get offers? When did you start actually talking to teams? And when did you make that decision to actually, you know, go to Clark University?
Yeah, so for me, it was definitely pretty intimidating to join a club team. And like, you know, the girls that wanted to play in college were basically already committed. And I was like, oh, okay. So, but I, you know, my coach, because I really did not know anything about the process. Like, I feel like it's changed. I also coach high school girls, and I think the process has changed a bit. But, you know, when I was in high school, like you really had to be proactive. Like you had to be emailing these coaches their schedule and like following up with them and like, you know, asking for visits and stuff like that. So he kind of just walked me through all of that. And he was like, you know, I have, I know the coaches at A, B, and C schools. If you want me to reach out to them, like we can walk. He just walked me through the process. So that was really helpful for me and my family, because we didn't know anything about it. And honestly, I mean, you can imagine, like, when you're trying to, you know, commit to a college that late in the process, like, basically all of the, like, D1 schools were done recruiting for my class. So my process was, and at the time, like, I didn't want to go pro. I just wanted to play in college. Like, that was never, like, on my radar, really. And I also didn't really know what I wanted out of, like, college at the time. Okay, now I can say I graduated with my master's from Hopkins, but at the time, like, I was like, school is second. Like, I just want to ball out, like, have fun, you know.
I feel that.
So and I didn't really have a criteria of like what kind of school I wanted to go to. So I looked at schools like all over, really all over the place. And my parents and I, they supported me through my delusions, and we went on a lot of visits. And I told my club coach that I wanted to major in psychology, which I ended up majoring in psychology. And Clark is really like world renowned in psych, primarily psych research. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, okay, I think that you should talk to the coach. This was the fall of my senior year. He was like, I think you should talk to the coach. Yeah. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll talk to her. So then I invited her to one of my like showcases that was coming up. And it was like the assistant coach that reached out to me. She kind of like brushed me off, whatever. I didn't know if she was going to come or not. And then she ended up coming to a game. She liked my game. And then she invited me up to, they had like a clinic in February of my senior year, they had a clinic. And I had to choose between that visit and a visit for another school that was D1. Because remember, Clark is D3. Mm-hmm. But something just told me, like, I should go to Clark. So my mom and I flew up to Boston. We drove to Worcester, which is where Clark is. Mm-hmm. And I went for the visit. And mind you, the coach didn't even invite me for an overnight. I'm like, I am not on this lady's radar. Like, she doesn't care about me, like, whatever. After the clinic, she comes up to me. You know how, like, after a clinic, you, like, go up to all the coaches. You're like, thank you for your time.
Thank you, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm doing that. I'm like, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then she's like, I would love for you to commit today. She was like, I would love to see you on campus this fall. And I was like, because all the other clinics that I have done, that I did, like, the coaches were like, oh, yeah, like, we'll email you, like, whatever. And, you know, some of them email you, some of them don't. And then so the fact that she was like, I really liked what you did today. I really want to get you on, like, what will it take to get you on campus this fall? I was like, oh, okay. And, yeah, I think it was, I think personally that decision changed. I keep saying things changed my life, but it did change the trajectory of my life. And I owe a lot to that woman. Like, she, to this day, we talk every week. Like, I love her. She's the best coach I ever had. 10 out of 10. No notes.
That's really dope. That's really, really dope to hear. That's actually a really crazy story. Just from start to finish, and just going, being able to go to Clark in that way and having, you know, really instrumental people throughout the process. You know, you talk about the coach that you had helping you get to there, get to Clark, and then, you know, your coach at Clark, really, you know, it's good to feel wanted in that way. And it just only helps your performance and only helps your character and as you grow as a person as well. So that's really, really dope to hear. And, you know, just kind of walk me through now your playing experience, you know, because I remember when I was a freshman walking in, and I went to Cleveland State, and I remember my first training session, I had full body cramps. So so kind of walk me through, you know, just kind of your Clark experience, you know, as a freshman and going on campus.
I mean, my time at Clark, so it was unfortunate because my senior year was actually the COVID year. So we didn't play. We were just training, and it was awful. Like, we had, like, training pods, so we could only train in, like, groups of four, and I was actually elected captain that year. I mean, in anticipation that we were going to have a season, and, you know, that meant a lot to me because I was the first Black captain in program history. However, being a captain in a moment where it's like no one wants to show up for training because you're not having games, like, how do you overcome that, you know? So that was actually a very difficult year. So in my mind, honestly, I was just kind of trying to gear up, like, the next senior class to get back on track the following year. That's really all I could do. But I mean, my time at Clark, I really enjoyed it. I think the competition was pretty good, despite being D3. I think in that, like, New England region, there's a lot of schools where they're D3 schools, but they attract great talent because of the school, you know what I'm saying? So, like, if you really want to study psych, you go to Clark. If you know, we had, like, MIT in our conference, so, like, you know, if a girl wants to do engineering, she's going to go to MIT. She's not going to choose, like, a random D1 school. You know, we have Babson, like, they're good for, like, economics. So yeah, I think we definitely were in a pretty competitive conference, and I just really enjoyed it. I mean, getting there was definitely an adjustment, just because, like, I think at any level, like, stepping from the high school to the college level is, like, you're going to get humbled, you know?
100%.
But I think I adjusted pretty well. Like, I never really was, like, I never had a moment of, like, I don't want to do this anymore. This is too much. I will say, the first day we all got on campus, we had a team meeting, and our coach, mind you, my incoming class had, there was 11 of us, which is a huge class.
That's a big class. That's a whole starting 11.
Yeah. That's a whole lineup. So she sits down the whole team. So there's probably, like, I don't know, 34, 35 of us.
I know.
She's like, so we're making cuts this year. And mind you, because that was, like, her, I think that was, like, her third year at that point, third or fourth year. So she had been building up her program. She didn't really have the numbers to cut people before. You know what I'm saying? But now she had, like, her own recruiting. She could bring in the people that she wanted. But that meant, like, some of those other people that she inherited, like, she didn't necessarily Like, they had to step it up, you know? And even some freshmen, like, even if you got recruited, you have to step it up, you know? Just because you impressed her at the high school level doesn't mean that you're going to impress in college. So when she said that, I was like, I'm about to be on the first flight back to Maryland. That's what I thought. I was like, there's no way. Like, but so that was like overwhelming. But I felt a lot better when I passed the fitness test. I've never failed a fitness test in my life.
Wow. Honestly, I've never failed one either. No, I've never failed a fitness test. But
yeah, it was a good 4 years. I really enjoyed myself at Clark.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, you know, everything considered, I mean, still scored 14 goals. You had 5 game winners, pretty clutch player at that point.
Wow.
You know, 6 assists as well. So, you know, I think you handled everything pretty well considering, you know, you still went to a very good academic school. And I mean, you were double major as well, no, biology as well at Clark at the same time or no?
I actually was a bio minor. I was I never intended to major in it. I always wanted to minor in it, but I think I was like 2 classes away from the major, but I wanted to study abroad. So I just chose to do that instead.
Okay. Fair enough. Where'd you go abroad?
I went to Cape Town.
Okay. Very cool.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, that just switched it up. Tell me about that experience. Yeah. I'm sorry, but kind of have to talk about that one. You know, please walk me through kind of that experience of studying abroad in Cape Town. You know, you're African, but being in a whole nother African country is a whole nother experience, especially it's like South Africa. They had the World Cup, it was just a beautiful country and city. So kind of walk us through that experience and, you know, just kind of what did you learn? Did you play football out there? Sorry, I have so many questions, but I'm sorry.
No, I'm that girl that studied abroad 20 years ago and she won't stop talking about it. That was me. I love my time in Cape Town. I will say again, COVID had other plans. I was supposed to be there for like 6 months, but I only was there for like 2.5, I think. So that really sucked. But I mean, for me, I always knew that I wanted to study abroad. Like my parents both went to college abroad. And like the whole traveling thing is not intimidating to me. And so I was like, I don't think I want to do the like whole Euro trip thing. Like that just wasn't really appealing to me. And so I knew that I wanted to study on the continent. And my mom travels on the continent a lot for work. So I was like, where do you think I should go? And she was like, I think that you'd really like Cape Town. She was right. She's my mother. So, but yeah, it was really great. I will say though, if I had stayed for the entire 6 months, I probably would have failed every class because I was not going to class. I was going to some class.
I hear you.
But no, it's actually really hard. But I will say, like, the program that I did was like a direct study abroad. So like I was taking all my classes at the University of Cape Town, which is like known to be like, they call it the Harvard of Africa. Like it's not a joke. And I was taking it as a joke. but I ended up doing well because I was quarantined in my house and had nothing else to do but my schoolwork. But Cape Town was amazing. I did play football there. I played for the University of Cape Town, which at the time was in the SASO League, so like the second division of women's football in South Africa. And they just got promoted to the first division, so now they're in the Super League, which is amazing. Okay. So I'm really happy for them.
That's a really great experience. So you did that your senior year, and COVID kind of ruined that, and then you come back to Clark. Kind of walk me through that experience. How was COVID? I had to graduate through that COVID year. I graduated in 2020, so kind of just walk me through that experience and coming back and, you know, those next moments after COVID.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was kind of just like, you know, I mean, obviously no one knew what the future was going to hold, but I was kind of just like, you know, I had the extra year of eligibility because we didn't have that season. And I had applied to Clark's fifth year program, which I was accepted to. And some of my teammates ended up doing the fifth year masters and playing as well. But the program that I applied to wasn't really one that I was interested in. So I was like, I don't want to just get a master's in something that I'm not interested in just so I can play an extra year. At Clark, at least. So I mean, it also was going to depend on if I got into like other programs, but I ended up getting into, I got into Hopkins, Columbia, and UCLA, and Hopkins was the cheapest. So I went home and I went to Hopkins and I did that. And I was coaching during that time. I was coaching high school.
That's cool. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, just in closing for me here, you know, kind of it's quite a journey, you know, from that high school coach, you know, taking that chance on you and really bringing you in from your college coach, bringing you into Clark and to an amazing environment. You ball out there, get to go to South Africa in the process. Just kind of, you know, how did that shape you, you know, now moving forward after all those moments, you know, kind of on and off the pitch, because you, of course, you continue to play, but yes, you know, you continue to do a lot of things off the pitch. We'll get into a little bit later, but kind of just tell me that kind of how that, you know, it shaped you.
I think honestly, what it did for me was just kind of inform my perspective in the sense of like, you know, I am so grateful to have grown up in PG County. It's an amazing place to live and to grow up. And that also really informed my worldview. But I think going to a place like Clark, which is extremely different, like that was the first time I was around so many white people in my life. You know what I'm saying? And like that was an adjustment.
I feel you. We went to Miami.
That was an adjustment. But it kind of like opened my, because before I was just in a bubble. Like I was just in a bubble of like people that were like-minded, and you know, I never had any issues, and that was my life, and it was great. But you know, that's not, I was like, oh, that's not what the rest of the country looks like. Which kind of did inform a lot of like my social activism that I did on campus, which was a lot of at the time. And then, you know, studying abroad in Cape Town, like that kind of gave me the perspective of like, oh, like the rest of the world is not like PG, you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like it just all built on each other. And I feel like it just makes me a more well-rounded person. I feel like I like to be open-minded. Like I like to hear different perspectives within reason. I'm not going to entertain nonsense, within reason. And so, yeah. And I just feel like it's given me a greater appreciation for differences.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. That's a great answer. I love what you said about, you know, all those experiences just informing your perspective. I think that was a bar, low key. I had to write that one down, but you know, you go from a tumultuous time in COVID, you graduate, you know, you figure out there's a lot of uncertainty. I don't want to go back to Clark. You know, fortunately get, you know, this acceptance program into Johns Hopkins, but then you randomly get the call from Zambia, you know, to maybe play professionally again. So what spurred the opportunity first and foremost, and what was on your mind when you get that call to potentially go play football again after all this time away?
Yeah, so another life-altering message. It actually was, so this was the spring of 2023, I think. And I'm in grad school, like fully in all my classes, like in person. I'm coaching, but I'm starting to think like, okay, like I really like coaching, but I really, really miss playing. Like I wish that I took my fifth year. Like there was just like a lot of like, I wish. And then I was like, okay, well I can do something about this. So I started to train with like a local semi-pro team. And then that's when I was like, And, you know, so it was kind of intimidating at first because the person who told me about it, she had been playing professionally in France. And she had played on this team, and like other girls that played professionally played on this team, or like girls that played like top 10 D1 schools played on this team. Sure. And I'm at the time, I'm like, oh, I'm just little old me, like whatever. And then I go and start training with them, and I'm like, oh, wait, like I can actually hold my own. and then like that kind of just like kind of sparked my competitiveness again. And I was like, okay, I really miss this. And every like year or so, like these like pictures of me would go viral on like Zambian Facebook, and they would be like, we gotta get this girl. And I'm like, okay.
Shout out but, to the hometown people.
Yeah. But nothing had ever come of it. Like the last time I went to Zambia was that the last time? Yeah, I guess so, because of COVID. The last time I went prior to this was 2019. And the Football Association, they knew about me. They, we had a meeting, they collected my information. I was supposed to get a passport, but the process was not very clear because Zambia just started allowing dual citizenship in like 2017 or so. So this was literally like the next year. And so yeah, didn't get the passport to say the least. So I was just like, whatever, like it's fine. Like, I'll keep cheering. And so, but then in the spring of 23, I randomly, like so random, got a Facebook message from the owner of, one of the owners of ZISD. Yeah, and he was like reaching out to me. And he was like, I know that you don't know me. I own a club in the Super League here in Zambia. And like, we know that, you know, FAS, which is the Football Association of Zambia. He was like, we know that FAS knows about you, but I think that they're lagging on the passport because they haven't like seen you play. He was like, you should come to Zambia just for 2 weeks. Like we'll sign it like a short-term contract. You can come and play. And then maybe that will like persuade them to get you on the national team. And I'm like, why does this man care so much if I'm on the national team or not? But anyway, so I had actually booked, so spring break was coming up, and I had booked a trip to, I think it was to Barcelona for my friend's birthday. Everything was paid for, everything. And then I was like, I'm going to Zambia. So I still have that flight voucher. But yeah, I don't know. Like it was just, there was just something telling me, like, you have to go. Like, just go. And I hadn't seen my family in some time. Like, I was like, let me just go. So I went. And I played in like a game or two, I think. And then, and then I got called to camp for the next upcoming like friendlies that the team was having. And so I went into camp and, you know, it's like, it was hard. It was like really hard. Honestly, like, I think they just don't, I just didn't know what to expect, I think. But I made a lot of friends. I learned a lot. And then I left camp. They were like, okay, you're not on the final. Because basically the way that Zambia does it is like they'll select like, I don't know, 30 or so people for camp. But then they'll shorten the roster for the actual tournament, like friendlies or whatever it is. Right. Then they were like, okay, you didn't make it. I was like, okay, fair enough. At least I went to camp. So then I'm in the hair salon, like getting my hair braided. My flight back to America is tomorrow. And then my family, like we have a family group chat, obviously. They were like, have you checked Facebook? I was like, no. And then so they had, like Faz had put out the roster for the tour, like for the friendlies, and I was on it. Wow. I was like.
That's Africa for you.
No. But, and then I went home and I packed up my stuff, and then we left for South Korea like the next day. So it was like, oh, and then I had to like sprint around and like, you know, frantically email all my professors and be like, just kidding, I'm not gonna be in class this week. It was a whole thing. And then we came back from South Korea, and then I ended up staying in Zambia until like May or something. But at that point I was only I only had one in-person class. The rest of them, it was just kind of like preparing for my to write my thesis, so I could do it all virtually. So my professor so graciously allowed me to do it remote, which was so nice of them. But yeah, that was a very hectic time because literally we'd have like 5 a.m. training and then breakfast and then what's supposed to be your time to nap, but I was over here doing assignments and then another training in the evening. It was a lot. It was a lot. But
no, that's I mean, in this quick 30 minutes, we've probably heard like four life altering stories. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And honestly, like what I was thinking the whole time is you have great intuition. You know, I mean, even from high school, you either can go to Clark or you can go to this other school. You decide to go to Clark, you get a scholarship or you get, you know, you get to go there on the spot. And now you're thinking about maybe going back home. You got spring break. You getting your hair did in the salon. And you find out you get called, you know, you get called up to the team. And it seems like whenever you have a fork in the road, your support system or your belief in yourself, you make the right choice. So it's been just super cool to hear all these stories and how you kind of always bet on yourself, which is dope to hear. And I think it's an inspiration for a lot of people who are thinking, you know, should I do this? Should I take this chance? I think if they hear this, they would be a little bit more motivated to go ahead and take that chance, especially if it's something, you know, that they've always wanted to go do, even if it was in the back of their mind. So I think that's super cool.
I was going to ask, before we get into your experience with the national league team, I wanted to ask, what was the transition like from playing here in America to playing in Africa when you were playing for ZI? Like, what were the main differences? Because I would imagine it's probably not the same as it is here in America. So, like, what was that experience like playing in the Super League?
I think I learned very quickly that the difference, and I saw this like on my own team, ZISD, and I also saw it like in other teams in Super League, I also the national team, like they just really prioritize like speed and strength. Okay. Yeah, and I think it was definitely a bit of an eye opener because when I was at Clark, like that was my thing, was my speed. And then when I got to Zambia, got humbled very, very, very quickly. And I was like, oh, I have to actually come up with something different. And so it's funny, actually, because my college, we recently had our alumni game. So like all the alumni, we play against the current team. It's really fun. Like it's like a whole weekend thing. And all of my teammates and like my coaches were like, wow, like your technique, like your touch has gotten so much better. And I'm like, yeah, because I can't rely on my speed anymore, you know? So, when I got to ZISD and also like the time I was with the national team, like they tried to basically like convert me into an 8, because playing as 9, it just wasn't really, it was no longer my strong suit. I know like, you know, as a 9, like you don't necessarily have to be the fastest, but that's the game that they play. So in that system, it wasn't really going to work. So I had a good time. It was a nice challenge. I enjoyed myself. But yeah, that was definitely like the biggest difference that I saw.
Very cool. And before we go over to the national team, I know with ZISD, you were also involved with like promoting the game at the educational level. Like how was your presence there help, you know, just build that culture of education? Because I know you were very big on that as well.
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of things that I want to do in the educational space when it comes to like women and girls football in Zambia. I think, I don't know. I think that there's a lot of things that need to change in the system, but I'm also still trying to learn more because at the end of the day, I didn't grow up there. So I think for me, what I would hate to see is like somebody like myself being the face of something rather than like doing, I'd rather do the hard work of it. And then have somebody else that has lived experience in that be the one doing the outward advocacy, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I don't want to be the person that like, I'm the face of whatever, you know, cause I don't think that that's right. Cause it's not something I went through. but I do see a lot of like a lot of room for improvement in that area. And I do like what ZISD is doing because they kind of have a program where they have their team in the Super League, but then they also have a program for athletes and non-athletes that are interested in going to college in the US. They do like SAT prep and just help them with their applications. So I think right now they're trying to kind of like bridge those two programs. So yeah, I think that's an amazing thing, like to give somebody that opportunity. So if we can like make that more widespread, and just even at the, like even at the grassroots level, because it's like a lot of times girls are faced with the decision to say, okay, like I'm getting pretty good at football. Like, do I keep going to school or do I play football? Yeah. And it's like, you shouldn't have to make that decision.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Right.
So yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on it, but yeah. Uh-huh. In a
nutshell. Academy coming soon. ZISD Academy coming soon.
So nothing says more African, you know, than you telling us the story about how you found out, you know, you got called to the national team. Nothing says African more than
that. No, seriously.
It's so funny, you know, you didn't find out yourself. You had to find out from somebody
Facebook.
Else.
From the family Facebook. Group chat, from WhatsApp. WhatsApp. Hey, you chat Facebook?
Yeah, literally. I was
so
like,
tell
no.
Us a little. Tell us a little bit more about your debut, how, you know, you felt stepping on that field representing your country for the first time.
It was an amazing feeling. The way that we traveled to South Korea was in groups, and I was in the last group. And then, I don't know, something happened with our flight or something. I don't really remember. But we ended up missing the first day of training, like, in South Korea, like, me and the other two girls that I was with. And so, and the game was like the following day. So basically I wasn't going to train at all before the game. Mind you, we didn't have the full team training in Zambia because the girls that play abroad, they just typically just meet the team directly in like whatever country, right? So like at the time we had girls in Spain, China, you know, so like they just go directly to South Korea. Okay. And so like that first training day is really critical because that's when you get to see the whole team together. And I missed that training. So then I was like, I will say I am a subscriber to the belief of stay ready so you don't have to get ready. I think in this instance, I was not staying ready. But so we get to the game and, you know, I'm like, he's not really making subs. I'm like, he's not going to sub me in. Like, there's just no way. They told me to get up and go warm up. And then so, yeah. And then that's when I made my debut. And it was just a very surreal feeling. I think also just being on the same team as such incredible players, like world renowned athletes. It was a really great experience. I mean, we lost that game, but it was something that I'll never forget. Yeah, it was amazing.
What was it for you to personally put on that Zambian jersey? Because you could have chosen to, you know, go the Armenian way, but you chose Zambia. So how was that moment for you, having, you know, a jersey that you can call your own, at least for your lifetime, and nobody can take that away from you?
I think for me, the experience as a whole, it means so much to me because my mom always raised me to really be connected to my Zambian heritage and to stay connected to my roots and to my family. I'm basically like the only cousin that grew up outside of Zambia. So she felt that it was really important that, you know, I know who my family is, like I know where I come from. And so growing up, like we would go to Zambia fairly often. I mean, as often, it's expensive to get there, but we try to go like every like 2 or 3 years. And so to have that time with my family and like be in Zambia, it kind of just made it all like that more special for me. And then on top of that, like the fact that I'm the first foreign born player to ever cap for Zambia, like that means, like you said, like no one can ever take that away from me. And I hope that my experience with the team and like working with Faz kind of paves the way for more Zambians in the diaspora to start coming home.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Want to get into the NWSL. I feel like women's soccer has grown a lot. Are you coaching girls?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I coach girls on like the team level, but I do individual training and I coach girls and boys for that.
Okay. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even myself, just being born here in America, the game has grown a lot, especially in the women's game. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the women's game now in the U.S.? And if there's something that you would change, what would it be?
I mean, for me, I think that the game has changed in the sense of, like, if you played soccer growing up, like, yeah, you'd go to a spirit game maybe, right? Because I'm from Maryland. But when we went to spirit games, it was all the way out in Germantown, which, you know, if you're like a DC transplant, you don't know what Germantown is. You know what I'm saying? It's like way out there. Yeah. And so the fact that like we have Audi Field now, for example, and it's like specifically for soccer, like having stuff like that, it makes the game more accessible, right? Like people that weren't soccer fans before, like they can easily become soccer fans now because the stadium is in the city. And you know, they make it so easy to be a part of. So I think in that sense, like the soccer culture has grown a lot, which really benefits us. I mean, I can't really speak to what's happening on the men's side because I don't know. men's soccer in the US is...
It's not looking good.
No. It's not looking good. The women's game, growing that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just really reassuring. And you said if I could change one thing, I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know. What would you guys change?
That's a good question.
I think the women's soccer in the U.S. is getting a lot more airtime than they normally did in the past. So I think it's heading in the right direction so far.
At least in my opinion. Yeah, I was going to agree with Mike. And just from personal experience, you know, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. And just like you said, you know, some of the first professional games I saw were the U.S. men's and women's national team. And no joke, when the women's team comes to town, they pack out the Brown Stadium. Like, they pack it out.
Yeah.
Like, women, men, everyone's coming, you know? And I think it's because, mm-hmm. you know, during the 2010s, that women's team was really just so huge that they brought a lot of exposure to their team. The whole gender equality pay, they were really big on that too. And mm-hmm. I think it inspired like a whole new generation of, you know, little girls and women to just get involved in the sport. So honestly, I think what they're doing is huge, and I love to see it just get bigger for real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to see an influx of money, because that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah,
and I think they deserve it at the end of the day.
Wait,
because, you know, there are so many ballers on the women's side that, you know, just kind of go under the radar. And I mean, we're tapped in because we love football. So, we watch. But there are just so many ballers. And I feel like, you know, it takes an influx of money for these things to grow and for there to be more airtime, for them to get TV deals and things like that. But, you know, the fact that, you know, you have a lot of athletes and especially a lot of prominent women athletes, you know, investing into these teams, you know, Serena Williams, I think Tom Brady's a minority owner of a team as well. You know, you just have more and more people investing, which is ultimately what I want to see, because that's only going to make the game grow more and more. I just want to see that influx of cheese, because cash rules everything around me. So, you know.
So I was going to say, like, staying on the topic of money, I think one thing that I would like to see change is we need to change, like, we need to shift from pay to play. Like, why? Why?
100%.
You know what I'm saying?
1,000%.
I don't want to make assumptions about anyone's background. Like, take the U.S. women's national team, for example. Like, most of their families come from more affluent background. Not all of them, but I would say most of them. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, how many girls are going under the radar simply because their parents couldn't afford to put them in a club team, you know?
Yeah.
So like they're we're missing out on such a huge chunk of the community in that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we talk about this on the podcast as well. You know, I was a, you know, I was a component of scholarship. My parents didn't have the money to go to every single tournament. And so, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to play club, you know, before junior year of high school, but not everybody gets that opportunity when it's pay for play. And then when you're on scholarship and you're scoring goals and you're getting more time than, you know, the manager's son who may or may not be better than you, it starts to divide and it starts politics where there shouldn't really be that, you know, especially when you're 9, 10, 11 years old. So I agree with that 100%.
No, definitely. I mean, that's soccer here in America, especially in the youth realm. I don't know if you guys saw, but Taylor Twellman had this rant, whatever, and he said that youth sports is all about money now. It's not really about the development. And like you were saying, you know, Gay, you're right. Like soccer here in America, you have to have money to play.
Yeah.
And to sustain that. I mean, as someone who's coached youth soccer for the past 4 years, I started with my team when they were U13, so they were about 12 years old. And I wrapped up with them when they were U16. And I just know that all that is, it adds up. And sometimes you filter through a lot of the talent because, you know, you're so focused on making money. But, no, those are all good points. I wanted to talk a little NWSL with you real quick. So on the podcast, week to week, we all picked a team to support for the NWSL. We decided not to pick Kansas City Current and Orlando Pride because they're our favorite teams. So we're going to pick teams. So I picked Gotham. That's going to be the team that I support throughout the season. Mike, who are you supporting?
San Diego.
San Diego.
I got Bay FC. Got Kiki Pickett. Yeah. Run it. Banger. Yeah. It's going to banger the other day. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, I'm watching. I'm rocking with the Washington Spirit. You know, shout out DMV area. Shout out Trinity Rodman. Yes, best sir. Wishes.
Aubrey Kingsbury from King's Hammer as well too. But are there any teams or players you're keeping an eye on this season? And what's your early prediction for the NWSL final?
I mean, okay. I don't want to dance around the subject. I think regarding the final, for me, it's going to come down to Orlando Spirit.
Orlando Spirit. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it would be a good game. Yeah. That's what I have to say. And then in terms of players to watch, I think that people. A really underrated player, in my opinion, is Jamise Joseph. She's with Chicago. This is her second season in the NWSL. And she has been getting called up to the under 23s for the U.S. Women's National Team. And she's just a baller through and through. Like, if you really sit down and watch her games, you're like, why aren't more people not talking about her? You know? But yeah, so... Jamise Joseph, like her work ethic is just next level. So, yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Right. What was your guys' final? Guys, what did we say?
I mean, Orlando. Yeah, I got to have KC. KC got to be there, you know, Temwa.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, to me, she's the best player in the league, so.
Barbara Banda is the best player.
Low key Angel City, man. I can see Angel City making a little run. There, I saw that little face. I'll just stay on this side. But they had a decent start. So we'll see if they can sustain.
Hey, man.
Okay. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's some smoke for Angel City. It's some smoke for Angel City.
No, not even. My all-time favorite player. She is with Angel City. I mean, not right now. She's taking a break from football. Sydney LaRue. I have a small appreciation for Angel City.
Respect.
Shout out to Sydney LaRue. She's a beast, man.
She's been my idol since I was, 9, 10. I actually had the opportunity to meet her last August. And I caught her like outside of the locker room because I was waiting for somebody. And then I was like, I know I'm here supporting the other team, but I like, you've been my idol since I was a little girl. Like, can we please take a picture? She was so nice. So
that's what's up. She's a dog, man.
Proper OG, man.
She built that national team.
But I want to before we get into some rapid fire questions, I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit about coaching. What does coaching mean to you? What's that experience like? Obviously, it's different from actually being on the field to just being on the sideline. But what does coaching mean to you?
That's a great question. For me, I never really saw myself coaching. Like, I wasn't like, oh, when I'm done playing football, like, oh, I can't wait to coach. Like, that was never my aspiration, I'll say. And I always had good coaches. Like, I don't really have any coaches that I can complain about. So I always had like those good role models. And my first ever high school coach, we like stayed close throughout college. Like, he's pretty young. And he always would say to me, he was like, when you're done at Clark and you're coming home, you're going to coach with me. I was like, no, I'm not. I'm not about to coach with you. Like, I don't want to. He was like, yes, you are. Yes, you are. He'd say it every year. You're going to coach. Can't wait for you to coach. I'm like, okay. So then I moved back home. I'm going to Hopkins. And then I'm like, okay, let me try out this coaching thing. And the first year was a little... it was a little rough. Like, I mean, it was his first year as like the varsity head coach, and it was my first year coaching. So there was a lot of like kinks to work out. I think learning how to like manage personalities, it's different being a captain versus being a coach. You know, and then it's like having to remember, like, you know, these people are not my age mates. It's like, you're not their, like, they're not your age mates, but then also like their parents aren't your age mates, but like, they're all getting on your nerves. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, who do I bring these qualms to? But I learned so much about myself, about coaching. And the second year I decided to come back. And then that was a much better year. Like, we really worked it out. I got like a coaching identity. And like, you know, developing that relationship with the girls. And then the third year, I was in Zambia that year, so I didn't coach. And then this past year, when I was back home in the fall, I coached. That was my third year with the high schoolers. And I was like really in my groove, like really enjoyed myself. And then that's when I was like, okay, like I actually really do like coaching. So then that's when I decided to pursue private training as well. And I think that honestly, can I say change my life? No, I'm kidding. But I think honestly, like I really just find like pure joy in seeing people transform. And it's like sometimes, you know, when you're coaching a team, you kind of have to worry about like team chemistry, tactics, things like that. But when you're doing like one-on-one trainings and you really see that person's development and like their, you know, their parents are like, wow, like, you know, I've seen them get better at X, Y, and Z, and like they're getting compliments from their club coach and this, that, and the third, like that was really rewarding to me as well, in a different way, but I really enjoy that.
Yeah, no, there's no better feeling. I'm very fortunate in my experience. I had 4 years at the club that I was working at. The kids that I was coaching are actually, they're juniors in high school now, so they're starting to kind of, you know, figure out what college looks like for them. So it's a great experience. And I think you're a great example for kids. I mean, you've had great coaches, and I think representation matters. I think, especially for people who look like us, you know, they got to be able to see a Black woman, a Black man, and be like, oh, okay. You know, I had some shitty coaches, you know what I'm saying? And there's some guys that went to high school with me that are going to watch this, you know exactly who I'm talking about. So yeah. But no, shout out to all the coaches out there, man. Let's get into some rapid fire questions. What's on your game day playlist?
I'm that person where I, like, if you put me on the aux, like, in a car, you're going to be like, what is wrong with this girl? Like, it's just all over the place. Okay. I have a lot on my playlist. I will say probably, like, my top game day artist, Gucci Mane.
Real one.
Hey, you just found
in the trap house.
Hey, trap house, trap house.
In the tray. Okay. Okay.
Wow. Yeah. Gucci
Lord. Right. I have to ask. Top five Gucci mixtapes.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
You're talking to a real Gucci guy right here.
Oh, so, yeah. I don't need a top five. I just need a top one. Trap house three. That's all you need.
Okay. We're locked in.
Bring the pressers.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't.
Yeah. Okay, my high school senior quote was a Gucci quote, which is insane. I'll send you a picture of it later.
That's okay. Love. Oh, wow. That's love.
I don't want
that's
to respect. Right
now. Yeah.
Respect.
That's love. Shout out to Gucci, man.
Shout out to Gucci.
What hobbies or passions have you pursued outside of the game of soccer?
I am getting back into my reading bag. I used to be an avid reader, and then TikTok ruined my life. I have no attention span. I am discovering an enjoyment. I don't want to say love, but an enjoyment of cooking. I like, you know, trying new dishes. And like on an academic and social level, I really enjoy public health advocacy work.
Yeah. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Favorite footballer? Sorry, top three favorite footballers of all time.
Top three? That's hard. I don't need top three, actually. You keep asking me top five, top three. I just have the one. Wait, are we doing women or men?
Both.
Both. Up to you. Yeah, both. Yeah.
Okay. And I don't want people to get confused. Best and favorite, because let's not do that.
Okay.
My favorite women football of all time, Sydney Leroux.
Okay.
She's a dog, and the way that she influenced me. And then favorite, and this is because I know you're going to ask me my favorite Premier League team is. My favorite player of all time.
Oh, my God. I know where this is going. I already know.
My favorite player of all time, Thierry Henry.
Oh my God. This is why we're homies. This is why we're homies.
We're here.
Put this away. Don't look at
we're
that.
Here with you.
Turn the camera.
Okay.
Wait. Salam, before you ask your question, I have one question. Because my boy, who's staying with me right now, my boy Yasser, he's also a huge Arsenal fan, but he's a Virgo. Are you a Virgo?
I am a Virgo.
Gang members. See? Okay.
You guys.
When's your birthday?
The 16th of September.
Oh.
That's insane. We have the same birthday.
I think it's a very common one, but it's the best day.
You're the first. Okay, I have one coworker actually that I just met that has my birthday, but I don't find that many common birthdays. Nah, not my birthday. I don't find many common.
You found one.
Crazy.
Not very cool. First jersey you ever owned, soccer jersey. Now I'm gonna ask everybody else too.
I don't know what my – can I show you my favorite jersey is?
That, yeah.
Okay, wait. Let me go get it. I know exactly where it is.
Okay. Okay. Love it. You have to go right. Oh!
No way.
The old school tree? Okay, respect.
Top tier. That's top tier right there.
Wow. That's my favorite. My best friends got me that for my birthday.
That's
awesome.
That's an amazing.
That's a sick jersey.
Vintage.
Yeah, that one's my favorite.
Okay. Well, I'm curious, guys. What was your guys' first jerseys you ever owned? Mine was a Columbus Crew Brian McBride jersey.
Mine was Ajax Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Honestly, it's random, I think my first jersey was an Arsenal Adam Bayor.
Okay.
25.
I think mine was like a David Silva Valencia. Yeah, to be honest.
Good. Very good. One word to describe your playing style.
I think it would be smart. Mm-hmm. Maybe don't ask my teammates that about me, but that's what I would say about myself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Smart. Okay. Smart.
You said you're an Arsenal fan. So is Gabriel. It's been quite an interesting season for you guys. I'm sure you've heard about or seen what's happened in the past 2 weeks. What are your thoughts on them in the Champions League right now? Do you think they can win it?
I hope so, because what else are we going to win? I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, fingers crossed. I'm an Arsenal fan in the sense of, like, I'm not going anywhere. You know what I'm saying? I'm here for the ups and downs. I think our ups and downs are better than others' ups and downs.
No, you guys have been starving too long. You guys are used to this.
No, not even like that. Starving too long. All right, okay, whatever. I'm not entertaining this anymore.
Yeah, thank you. That's, I don't entertain it either. Trust me.
No, we're better than this.
Yeah, that's guy over there is a certified Arsenal hater. Certified.
Hey, I have to. It's part of being a blue, you know? The pride of London. There's only one.
Let them know. Here we go. Let them know, Mike.
Mike, let's not even start.
Let's do this one. If you could create a five-a-side of your favorite teammates, who's making your squad and you're the coach of this team?
I feel like this question is going to keep me up at night. Like, yeah. Okay. Favorite teammates. Okay. From any team that I played on?
Yeah, from any team that you played on, you need a keeper for field players.
Okay, keeper. I'm going to go Mo Small. She was my keeper at Clark. Amazing. Yeah. Like, I wish that she would come out of retirement, but she refuses. And then four field players, I'm going to go Jamie Joseph, also from Clark, played pro in Iceland. She's a dog. I'm going to go Cheyenne Bonick, capped. We played in high school together. She's capped for Jamaica. Also nasty. Wow. Like, she's a goal poacher. Like, you don't want to go up against her. Yeah. And then... let's go from Zambia. I'll say I'm going to go Grace Chanda and Prisca Chalufia as my last two choices.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Nice.
All choices. Nice. What aspects of your upbringing have helped shape you as a professional on and off the field?
I think, honestly, like, perseverance and work ethic. I hate being outworked. Like, I... truthfully, I'm not, like, the most skillful person. Like, I was never that person that was like, wow, like, look at her. She's so techie. Like, no, that was not me. But I always made sure that, like, if the coach was putting me out there, like, it was for a reason. Like, they weren't going to regret that, you know? Like, there should not be a reason that someone is outworking me. And I think that's just comes from my parents and just, like, their approach to life. Not in the sense that they're, like, intense or, like, crazy or anything, but just, like, the way that they approach things, like, they care so deeply about the things that they do, and it's just kind of like, if you're gonna do something in life, like, why would you do it halfway? You know what I'm saying? You might as well do it. You're already here, so just do it. And that's kind of like also the mentality that I bring to coaching as well. Like, I hold my players to really high standards, and it's not because, like, I want to be mean to them or anything like that. I would only do that if I thought that they were good enough to get there. Otherwise, why would I waste my time? You know, yeah. But I think, yeah, this life is all about, like, seeing how far can you go with something? Like, I never intended to play internationally. And then it was like, when I found myself in that position, it was like, okay, like, let me do this then, you know? And then mm-hmm. it was like, I didn't know that I was going to apply to master's programs mm-hmm. until I guess like the summer going into senior year of college. And then when I did, I was like, okay, I'm only applying to top five programs. You know what yeah. I'm saying? So, like, let me push myself and see how far I can go. Even if you don't make it, at least you tried and at least you experienced mm-hmm. the journey of it. You know, I really do think that there's no such thing as like failing. You know, you're whatever it is that you're, you know, endeavoring to do, like, you're going to learn something along the way. So that's wow. I think, what I got from my upbringing.
No, that's a great piece of advice. I mean, mistakes, I feel like, are the best lessons. I think I know the four of us have definitely learned that from just, you know, doing this podcast for the past 5 years now. We started in COVID, and it's definitely a lot of lessons along the way. That's great. Two more for you. What's one piece of advice that you received that has stuck with you throughout your career?
That's a tough one. I think it was kind of, well, one thing that one of my coaches said, he said it about himself, actually, funny enough, but it was kind of like what we were talking about earlier. Like, he always said, like, he says if he was a betting man, he would bet on himself 10 times out of 10, you know? And then after I heard him say that, like, I was like, that's how I want to be about myself. You know, there should be no doubt in my mind that I can, you know, achieve what I want to achieve. And I think for me, the biggest thing, especially as a Black woman in society, is like, if I believe in myself, then no one else's opinion really matters. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I present myself as confident and I really believe that I deserve whatever it is that I'm going for, like, there should be no reason why I don't achieve that. Not to say like, oh, I'm just so deserving because of X, Y, and Z, but like, no, I'm deserving because I worked hard for it. So if other people, you know, want to put me down or say like, oh, I only got this because X, Y, and Z or whatever, like, I know that's not true. So what does it matter? I bet on myself.
That's great. That's great.
That's good.
Self-belief is everything. That's, that's inspiring. Last one. What would your message be to young girls chasing a football dream?
It's going to go hand in hand with what I just talked about. Confidence is everything. I really believe that there is a crisis of confidence, especially in the youth these days. I don't know, like, I know that you're involved, Salam, with youth soccer, and like, these kids are not confident.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's really hard. I can do it. I can do my part to try to instill confidence in you, but a lot of that has to come from inner work. You have to believe in yourself. You're not, no one else is going to believe in you for you. You have to believe in yourself first and foremost. For me, how I built my confidence, and like, this is not going to work for everybody, but what I did was, like, when I was in high school, I was not very good at soccer. Being completely honest, I was not that good. But what I told myself was, before every game, I would tell myself, I said, they need me. They need me to win this game. Even if that was the furthest thing from the truth, even if at first I was getting 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I would tell myself, my team needs me to win.
It's huge.
And I said that every single game until I started to believe it. And then after I believed it, it was actually true. You know, I was playing with confidence. I became a much better player. And then my team actually did need me, you know? So I think, I don't know, maybe that's like fake it till you make it, I guess. But I think like whatever you have to do to become a more confident player and person, because it's not just about playing, you know, it's about everything. It's about life. I think we all know very well that, like, you know, who you are as a player informs who you are as a person. And like the lessons that you get from football, like, they apply to every aspect of life. So yeah, you just need to find a way to, and not put it off. Don't just ignore the issue, like, really sit down and think about it, and think about like where your lack of confidence stems from. And just, yeah, you have to like put yourself in those uncomfortable positions if you want to grow and like move through them.
Right. No, that's incredible. That's inspiring. I definitely second that. I don't know what it is about the youth nowadays. I don't know if it's just because, you know, we live in an era where they have a lot of access to a lot of different things. So they're seeing a lot of different things. But the confidence, you're right, is something that I feel like when we were growing up, it wasn't as big of an issue as it is now. I felt like my 4 years of coaching, the first year of coaching was all just pep talks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally. I mean, you know, that happens throughout every season, but no, you're right. I think, but having someone like yourself to uplift the team is definitely what's needed. So very good. You guys got anything before we get out of here?
I'm going to say thank you for coming to Inonje's TED Talk, because that was good.
I'm dead.
No, definitely an inspiring story, though. Quite a journey, if I'm being completely honest, from start to finish. Really, really inspiring to hear. So appreciate your time. Thank you so much. I love.
Yeah. Just once again, thank you so much. You know, this was super fun and super inspirational. You know, you're a shining example of the power of positive thinking, and I think that goes a long way. So thanks again.
Yep. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, we can't thank you enough. Inonje, thank you for your time. You know, we wish you nothing but continued success on and off the field. And we'll have to follow up with Cornelius's pick for NWSL final. But until then, just thank you again. I really appreciate it. Can't thank you enough. And just thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you.